How do you think the Jews were supposed to know who the Messiah was? Do you think that they were just going to wait for the Bible to come out and then they were going to read it and see if this is what they thought it was? Well, God gave them prophecies so that they could be eyewitnesses of the Messiah's life and to see if he truly is the Son of God. The first prophecy I would like to look at is in Daniel chapter 9, verse 25. When we're reading Daniel chapter 9, verse 25, we see that Daniel here is prophesying that there's going to be this period of time for restoring Jerusalem, and then there will be a longer period of time until the Messiah comes. Now here, he's using figurative language. He's not literally saying there's going to be 7 weeks or 49 days. This is just something that the Jews are going to understand because they were there when they were building the temple and the rest of Jerusalem. So they would see how long this could take, and they could understand how long this is going to take for them. And then in verse 26, it says, "And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself." So here it's saying, first, there's going to be a period of time for the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Then we're going to have a period of time until the Messiah comes. After that, the Messiah is going to be killed. Now, in verse 27, it tells us when this is going to happen. It says, "Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abominations shall be the one who makes desolate, even until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate." So here it says that in the middle of the week, there's going to be an end to sacrifice, because the Messiah himself is going to be killed, and he will be the final sacrifice. So this prophecy was given to the Jews that they could know when the Messiah is coming and when all these events are supposed to take place. Next, let's look at a prophecy about where he's going to be born. So let's turn to Micah chapter 5, verse 2. In Micah chapter 5, verse 2, we learn two different things. The first thing that we learn is that the Messiah, the ruler of Israel, is going to come out of Bethlehem. So this is where he's going to be born. And we also learn that the one who will rule over Israel, where he's from, is actually from everlasting. So he's not somebody who was just born in Bethlehem and that was his beginning. This has always been the plan. He's from everlasting, and he's going to come out of Bethlehem, and that will be where he enters into the world. Let's read Micah chapter 5, verse 2 now. "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from of old, from everlasting." Here we can clearly see that it's prophesied here that the ruler of Israel is going to be from Bethlehem of Judea. And we also see that he's from everlasting. So this is another clue that people would be able to see. So Jews, when the Messiah came, they'll see this person and they'll say, okay, where was he born? If he's not born in Bethlehem, this is not the Son of God. So this was the second clue that God gave them. Let's look at another prophecy in Genesis 49:10. Here in this passage, Jacob is prophesying about what's going to become of the nations of his sons. In Genesis 49:10, he's specifically talking about Judah. It reads, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people." So when Judah gets the scepter, basically when Judah starts being the tribe that has all the kings, it's going to stay in their family line, and the lawgivers will also all be from Judah, but eventually someone's coming. So Shiloh's going to come, and he's going to be the final king and the final lawgiver, and the obedience of everybody is going to be to him. And in some other translations, it's actually translated as, "He to whom it belongs shall come." So this makes it a little bit clearer that all the way from the beginning, all the way back in Genesis, it tells us that somebody's going to come from the family line of Judah, and they're going to be the final king, and they're going to establish the new law, and they're going to be the final law. And this person, it's always belonged to them, and they're going to be from the tribe of Judah. So this is another thing they're able to see. They're able to see what tribe is he from. Is he from Judah? Is he not? So these are several clues that are about his birth, but there's one more prophecy that talks about event a little bit after his birth. Let's go to Jeremiah 31:15. Here, Rachel is crying about her children, for they are no more. It specifically reads, "Thus says the Lord, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted for her children, because they are no more." So Rachel is seen here as the mother of Israel. So here they're talking about the nation of Israel, and they're saying that the children of Israel are going to be killed, because it says they're going to be no more, and this is why Rachel is very sad. But we know they're not talking about all of the descendants, because otherwise all of the Jews would have been wiped out. Specifically, it's talking about the actual children. So the little kids, the next generation, is going to be killed. And this is going to be a terrible event that people will know about. So when the Messiah comes, they'll see, all right, he's from Bethlehem, right? This is the time when God told us that he was going to come. He's from the tribe of Judah. And just like it says here in Jeremiah 31:15, there's going to be this terrible event happened where Herod killed all these children. He killed the next generation. So these are some clues that God gave the Jews about the birth of Jesus. But let's look at some prophecies about the death of Jesus. So the fifth prophecy is going to be found in Psalm 22:16. In Psalm 22, it tells us that the person they're talking about, they describe him as being despised and rejected by men. So we know that they're talking about the Messiah here. And specifically in Psalm 22:16, they tell us how the Messiah is going to be killed. The verse says, "Dogs surround me, a pack of villains encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet." So they said that they were piercing his hands and his feet, right? So that sounds like crucifixion. But crucifixion wasn't a thing until about 400 BC. This was written all the way in 1000 BC. Nobody had heard of people being killed this way. And nobody would ever hear of anybody being killed this way for even 600 more years. But they tell us that this is specifically how he's going to die. And so if you're living in the time that this happens, you can see what happens to him. And you can see that he was killed in this way that they didn't even know of a long time ago. And you can see it for yourself. The sixth prophecy is in Isaiah 53:12. In Isaiah 53, again, they're describing somebody as being despised and rejected by men. So we're still talking about the Messiah here. And so this is Isaiah 53:12. It reads, "And he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bore the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors." So when the Messiah came to earth, and he was up on the cross, he was bearing the sin of everybody, and he was making intercession for the transgressors, but he was also killed with the transgressors. So while he was crucified alongside criminals, the very people that he came to earth for. He came for everybody, not just the criminals, but everybody. But he was specifically killed among criminals. And so this is something else they could also see. Okay, he's being crucified. All right, that's good. We know that he's fulfilled his prophecy. All right, was he crucified by himself? No, he was crucified with other criminals. All right. And then the seventh prophecy is in Psalm 34:20. So normally in crucifixion, since the job of the Roman soldiers is to make sure that they suffer a terrible fate and end up dying, they will normally break the legs of those on the cross because this ensures somebody's death. So this is what they do all the time. But it specifically tells us in Psalm 34:20, He guards all his bones, not one of them is broken. So if now you see him, he's on the cross, you see that he's numbered with the transgressors, and normally now what would happen is his legs would be broken. So it would not be a normal thing if his legs weren't broken. And so this specific prophecy is something they can see. They can see his legs weren't broken. They're supposed to be broken to ensure his death, but they weren't. Every single part of it, all of his bones were kept intact. And then the final prophecy that we're going to see is going to be read in Isaiah 53:9. The basic idea in this prophecy is that although Jesus died with the wicked on the cross, he's going to be buried in a rich man's tomb. So let's read it. It says, "And they made his grave with the wicked, but with the rich at his death, because he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth." Here, grave isn't necessarily referring to his tomb, where he's put after he's been died. Grave is just saying where he's killed. That's what this is meaning here. So it's saying the place he's killed is with the wicked. So that was him on the cross with the criminals. He was killed with the wicked. And then it says, but with the rich at his death. So after he's already died, where is he going to be? I mean, the Roman government just crucified him, right? They could do whatever they want. But it specifically tells us that a rich man is going to come and he's going to put him in his tomb. That's where he's going to be kept. He's going to be put in a rich man's tomb. And there are far more prophecies than just these eight. So these eight prophecies were things that they're out of his control. He can't do anything about this. And all of these people could be eyewitness accounts to it and see for themselves that this is the Son of God. And although these are only eight prophecies, there's actually, the chance of this happening is actually really crazy. It's the same chance as being struck by lightning 142,857,142,857 times. The most I've heard of was like three times. So over 142 billion is quite a lot. And this is only talking about eight prophecies. But there's not only eight, not just 80, 160, or 250. There's actually 332 prophecies, and every single one of them was fulfilled by Jesus of Nazareth, proving he is the Son of God.